up. What did he say in the bathroom scene with Deckard? You gotta get it up if you wanna win. If you wanna play or something. What the? How can I remember?
I don't know. Do you want me to look back on my notes?
No, but it's just nice because I thought it would apply to us starting the podcast.
Look, I'll look.
I'll leave this all in.
I don't care.
Do it. I won't.
When did that happen? Before or after the nail?
Before. Way before. You better... Something... What the hell did he say? You better get it up. If you want to play. You can't win if you don't play. If you don't... whatever. Something like that.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Blade Runner Minute, our twice weekly podcast where we analyze and review Blade Runner 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete.
And I'm Sandra.
And today is...
Supersized episode.
Okay, sure. It might be a little longer because of the content, but that's not what I was going to say.
Oh.
Selfish. I was going to say it's a special episode because we're going to spend a little more time remembering Rutger Hauer. I got to get used to saying the late Rutger Hauer now. Is that some bullshit or what? That shouldn't be happening. I don't believe I want to live in a world where I have to say the late Rutger Hauer. It's July 24th, 2019, and we're recording episodes 107 and 108 because we'll be damned if we're going to split up the Tears in Rain speech that Rutger gives in 107. And it carries over a few seconds. So we just decided, since these are Roy's last minutes, and we just lost Rutger Hauer today... I know you're listening to this Tuesday, or at least this dropped on Tuesday.
Or like 7 years from now.
Yeah, whenever you're listening to this.
When the whole world is based on our thoughts and feelings, like in Bill and Ted.
Yeah, so we just wanted to turn the mic on and express ourselves. So we're going to be a little scattered today. Everybody's a little emotional here. So Rutger Hauer's passed away, and Roy is about to pass away in this minute. Because it starts with... 107 starts with Roy looking down at a shocked Deckard. And we're just going to keep going through minute 108.
Which ends with
Roy Batty's final moments.
The spinner, yeah.
Oh, you put the spinner floating up? I saved the spinner for the episode.
Okay.
Why ruin it now?
I don't know.
Now they know there's a spinner coming.
I think they already know.
The spinner coming. Dude, the spinner, by the way, it has a Hallmark replica spinner. Is coming out. The ornament.
You know, we always have a real tree, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's very heavy. It's going to be...
All the Hallmark ornaments are super heavy. Yeah,
you think so?
You can't actually put them... Like your Hal. We can't put that on the tree.
The Hal... was it 9,000? I think it was 9,000. The 9,000 series is...
Our Star Wars ones we can't really put up either because they're just too heavy. Because we do a real tree.
So Deckard's settling down. He's exhausted. He's shocked that Roy's not killing him. Roy just saved Deckard's life. And Deckard's sitting there with the rivets up his butt on the roof, crawling.
I don't think he's too bothered by that because of the pain in his hand or the adrenaline is pumping so much that he can't really feel any of that.
And he's staring up at Roy and he's backing himself up. Deckard is to this pillar, this portion of the roof, whatever this is, this wall, and he's just waiting for Roy to do something.
And Roy looks down at him.
Roy's looking down at him.
And he just sits down.
And he just calmly sits down, nail in the hand. Still got the dove in his hand, which is a real dove, by the way.
It's a real dove, and he has the TDK sign behind him, glowing. And Deckard looks like he's going to pee on himself. He's so scared.
Wait, hold on. Tokyo Denki Kagaku. Tokyo Electrical Science.
Okay.
Just in case you forgot, lady.
Okay.
Go on.
And Deck looks scared, and then Roy opens his mouth. And he says...
You want to...
This beautiful thing.
You want to do the whole speech?
You want me to do it?
Do you want to do it, or do you want me to... Do you want to do call and respond?
No, I want you to do it.
Oh, you want me to do the whole thing?
Yeah, I want you to do it.
Let's try a call and respond thing. And we can always cut it out and re-edit something better. But I got a feeling you're going to nail it with me. So I'll do the first line, and then you do every other line.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
You can do it. I just squeezed her shoulder in a supportive, loving way. Because she's got more strength in her than she knows. Roy looks down. Roy looks over, rather, because now they're...
Now remember, this whole thing is going to be dramatic pauses.
But this is key.
And we cannot replicate his dramatic pauses.
So this is key right now. Roy's not looking down at Deckard anymore. And he's not looking at Deckard's back anymore. He's been chasing Deckard. He's been looking down at Deckard. Now he's eye to eye. Replicant and man. Leveled.
Mm-hmm.
Level with each other. Eye to eye. Same level. You get that?
Yes.
You get the significance of that?
Yeah.
It's all settled down now.
I got something better that I want to say, but I don't know if I should say it now or later.
He looks over at Deckard, and Roy says, I've seen things that you people wouldn't believe.
Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion.
I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate.
All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain.
Time to die. That's some stuff right there.
You want to break it down?
No, not the whole speech, but the tears and rain part was all Rutger Hauer.
Well, the originals were much longer than this.
Right.
And he said it was too much. It's not something that someone, when their batteries are dying, would say.
That was Peoples that wrote that one, right?
There's two different versions. There's the version that Peoples wrote, and then there's the version that
Fancher?
That Rucker finally saw, that Hampshire wrote. They're both a little bit too much, he said. But that last line, like tears and rain, that's all Rucker.
That's all Rucker.
It wasn't improv. It was something he sat down and rewrote and worked with because he feels like no one would know the character better than he does. Because he is that character of any movie he's in.
So this is Rutger Hauer's thoughts.
He feels that he should have the say-so because it's his character and what it would come out of naturally. Wow,
What a talent.
That being said.
What a gentleman.
He says in the book, Future Noir, that everyone always writes about me in that speech and ignores the screenwriter. I thought David Peoples, the man who wrote that version of Batty's thing, really did a beautiful job. I mean, I love those images he came up with. Sea beams glittering near the Tannhauser Gate and the attack ships off the shoulder of Orion. I thought they're really interesting, even if I didn't understand them.
Which is very important, because he's right. Most people won't understand this. It's a beautiful speech, but most people wouldn't understand what he's talking about.
It was too much tech.
Except for these moments will be lost like tears and rain. That's the part that gets people.
Right, so the other versions, you want to hear the other versions? I don't know if you looked them up.
Well, before we get into that,
okay.
Do you know what Tannhauser's Gate is?
No, but I figured it's
a place. Do you know what sea beams are?
Yes, but I don't think it's accurate.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just go look it up, and then, no, keep doing what you're doing.
No, I don't need the book.
And I'm going to just seamlessly edit it into this moment right now.
So you can look up Tannhauser Gates. I'm going to talk about sea beams. So sea beams are...
No, but wait.
Cesium beams that are actually used in atomic clocks, but the way they're using it, based on the other Blade Runner stuff from the Runnerverse, stuff that has come out after that, it's a particle beam weapon.
Okay.
It's a beam that comes out like a lightsaber, but on ships.
But wait, not in real life. You're talking about...
In this universe.
Oh, this is all fictional?
Yes.
Wait a minute. I thought sea beams were like
stars
or something.
No,
like he's talking
it's
about
a type
celestial
of beam,
bodies.
But they use them like atomic clocks. They've never weaponized them as far as I've found.
What's a Tannhauser Gate? I thought it was like a solar system or like a nebula, like something that you could see off in the distance.
But what's important about that line is not what a sea beam is or a Tannhauser Gate, because it doesn't matter. What's important is when you're watching them glitter in the dark, he's watching weapons so close. He's so close to these weapons that he sees them flash and glitter. Like, he's in the middle of fights.
So none of these things actually exist?
No, but replicants don't exist, Peter.
But... I thought I was learning about astronomy and stuff.
No. So, let me give you the other versions. In one of the early versions of the script, it says, I've known adventures, seen places you people will never see. I've been off-world and back, frontiers. I've stood on the back deck of a blinker bound for the Plutonian camps with... sweat in my eyes, watching stars, bite on the shoulder of Orion. I felt wind in my hair, riding test boats off the black galaxies and seen an attack fleet burn like a match and disappear. I've seen it, felt it.
Nice.
the next rewrite, the one that Rutger saw that he changed, was, I've seen things. Seen things you little people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion, bright as magnesium. I rode on the back decks of a blinker and watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the townhouse gates. All those moments, they'll be gone.
And that's the final version that Rutger changed?
Yes. Okay. And he called it too high-tech and opera talk.
Now, from I've read it a couple of times at a few different, I think I even heard it on the special features disc of Blade Runner, but supposedly there was a table reading of this, or maybe they even just shot the scene, because I don't think Rutger told anybody that he was changing the line, especially David Peebles. So they did, I think it was a table read. They were doing the scenes together, and he read the line, Rutger did, and then he added the Tears and Rain part, and looked over in this, like, naughty way over at David Peebles, and David Peebles didn't want to make a fuss about it, but he was mildly irritated, supposedly, that Rutger changed the line without asking or telling him. He just went on his own.
I'm assuming writers would get upset about it, but I think what's important here is, while it is a beautiful line, all those moments will be lost in time, like tears and rain, but all those moments are lost in time when anyone dies, replicant or human. That unless there's someone to carry on your story, you write a book, you make a podcast, you tell your story to a future generation, those things always get lost, like tears and rain. There is no, everyone's always going to remember our deeds, because even if you're Napoleon and your deeds are written about in textbooks for generations to come, that's not the same as knowing the things you firsthand have experienced. You know, like, as a teacher,
all we know are stories about Napoleon.
Right.
Yeah.
The only, when we talk about, when you teach social studies, we tell the kids the difference that between a first-hand document and second and third-hand documents, how the diaries that people left behind are the ones that really tell us what the person was feeling or thinking, because that's their words personally. Like, it's something that came directly from who they are.
Mm.
That when you read about Columbus, that on his earliest voyages, he sympathized and liked the peoples that he was meeting on this side of the world. And then in later voyages, when it became more that they needed, he had a job to do because of the kings and queens, he started writing about how terrible the natives were to justify what he was doing to these people.
Right.
So it's those firsthand documents that we really learn anything from. So really, for any human, all of our moments are tears and rain, and they disappear. You know, Katerina will never really understand what's gone on in our relationship. Our kids will never know all those little things. They'll be gone. Even if we tell them how we met, they won't ever really know those moments. You know what I mean? Like, we won't ever be able to explain to her what it felt like before our first kiss.
So, not to be difficult and not...
Be difficult.
Not to dispute you, but can't Deckard at that point say, yeah, so what, me too?
Well, I love that you said that.
Right.
Deckard has never said one word to Roy.
Huh.
Leave in this space so you can think about that. Deckard has not said one word to Roy.
Why do you think that is? That was a conscious decision from by the writer?
I don't know. I haven't really thought too much about it. All I know is that every time all these minutes that we've been doing since they've been in the Bradbury, Deckard hasn't opened his mouth.
He talks to every single character.
He said something to Pris on the video phone.
From Deckard to from Bryant to Gaff to Pris. Yeah. Yeah, right, on the phone, Pris, technically, that counts. Leon, Rachel, friggin' eye patch lady.
But he hasn't said anything since he's been in the Bradbury. I think the last time he actually spoke was when he spoke to the cops, when he was calling Pris.
He even spoke of JF.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old friend of JF.
But I think that was the last time he spoke, so it's been who knows how long since we heard... Anything from Deckard, but he has never said even one word, like no, to Deckard.
To Roy.
I mean to Roy. Not one word.
That is absolutely interesting. You noticed this, or you read this factoid somewhere?
If I read it somewhere, I would have heard why they think that is, but I... Nowhere.
Well, let's try to figure that out. Why hasn't he spoken? Why is it important? So you're writing this movie. That can't be true, actually. I hope we're right.
It's 100% true.
In the bathroom?
Well, let's lay
takes
it out.
He shoots through the wall. There's nothing. He's hiding. He's climbing up the armoire through the lintels, on all those lintels, up onto the second lintel. And he never says anything. He smirks a couple times here and there as he's running.
He huffs and puffs.
Spits in his face. And just sits there and watches him die.
Never says a word. Hasn't said a word since he got out of his car.
People forget. I forget. And a couple people that I've spoken to over the years forget that the last line of the speech is not tears and rain. It's time to die.
Time to die. Because it's not as pretty as the rest.
Well, it's also, you could consider it a separate statement.
I think the
speech ended at tears and rain. And he's like, oh, and by the way, time to die. And
then he just
slowly puts his head down. And did we catch? Oh, of course, we're going into minute 108. Do you want to talk about what happens next?
Well, hold on. We didn't finish why we think he hasn't spoken to him.
Oh, right. I proposed the idea and then you glossed over it. Glossed over it. So I'm writing a movie, and the protagonist and antagonist never talk to each other. Is that building some sort of tension or mystery? Is that strengthening their bond in these final moments? They didn't need to talk to each other. They never spoke to each other. They've been adversaries, having never said a word to each other. So why should they speak to each other now that they've bonded in friendship?
The more you're trying to think this out, the more I'm thinking about how in Heat, through most of the movie, you never see Al Pacino and Robert De Niro in the same room.
I swear to God, I just thought of Heat while I was saying
and
that.
And the only thing I could think is, that's why my father thought they were the same person.
Because he never saw them on screen at the same
time. Right, and then when he finally saw that one part in the diner when they're talking to each other.
Right.
My dad was like, oh, then they must be brothers.
So when your dad saw Clark Kent go into the phone booth and open up the button-down shirt, did he shit himself? And he was like, what the fuck? That's the same guy? That's Bruce Willis under the toupee the whole time.
So in Heat, we never had them speaking because it was a cop and bad guy, right? That if they would speak, the universe would implode. No.
The whole point of those actors, those specific actors in those specific roles in that specific movie was to keep them as far apart as... The whole movie
like
was
they
designed...
Like Godfather 2.
The whole movie was designed, yes, to keep Pacino and De Niro away from each other so that it's basically two amazingly powerful performances.
And two separate stories that you empathize with.
And then
when
they get together, you're waiting for this shootout that never happens. Instead, it's a conversation over a cup of coffee. And later on, there's some action, but you think that their first encounter is going to be Batman and Superman. It's going to be punches and explosions and friggin' jumbo jets and planets colliding. It's not. It's just a couple of guys in a diner.
Maybe Harrison Ford's not talking because he's too scared and he's out of breath.
No, I think it was to maintain the separation between them. It's he doesn't know anything about them. Deckard doesn't know anything about these replicants, because the more he learns about them, the more he sympathizes, and the guiltier he becomes, the more he drinks, the more he's killing himself.
Headcanon accepted.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think
he doesn't want to engage.
He doesn't want to engage. He doesn't want this guy to say something that'll make him say, did we just become best friends?
Okay, he doesn't want to engage, but that's interesting. He never says anything to him.
Now, after we're done with this, if we want to go back and do special episodes where we talk about the voiceover version, I didn't include it in these notes because we're not talking about that version. I want to keep it separate. But there is a little more to this scene as Roy Batty dies and puts his head down, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous shot with the rain. I always loved the way Rutger, how his hair looked.
Yeah, the rain was dripping off gorgeous. Of him, and it was pinkish from all the blood.
Yeah, and
that
then,
was a really good touch.
And the camera switches, the shot changes to Deckard, mm-hmm. staring at Roy dying. Sad to say Rutger dying. It used to be a mistake, and now it's a sad mistake. As Deckard's watching Roy die, he has a voiceover, and he has thoughts about what's going on. I'm not going to say it now, but...
I
don't remember it word for word. And it'll just be better when we talk about it in its own context, in its own episode.
Okay.
But it does add some layers to the scene. It's good stuff. And that was mostly what 108 was, too. It was mostly just them, just back and forth. It was the end of the speech.
Well, you could see even Tears during his little speech, his he was struggling a little. It looked like he was, the dramatic pauses weren't just for effect. It looked like he was starting to, the batteries were going down, as the way Rucker always said, the
struggle. Battery. He had to get those words out, those last words.
That the batteries are going down, yeah. He had to get them out. Deckard looks like he has an almost smile, but not exactly.
I noticed you asking that. You paused, you went back on the remote, like, when we watched it. And you were, he did seem like there was this...
Went from scared to not
millisecond
scared.
Millisecond of joy, almost. Not joy.
Understanding, maybe?
Yeah. Something between understanding, like, oh, he wasn't a bad guy, and something between a relief of, oh, he's not going to kill me, or I don't have to kill him, or it's over. It's over, I think, is...
Relief.
Yeah, relief. You're right.
I had a hard time with the fact that Rucker put his head down. Roy's head goes down when he dies, but he didn't fall over. He stayed sitting up.
Well, why do you think that is?
Because he's a machine and not a human.
Because in the original version, he's a machine, clearly.
So he just winds down.
Yeah. So, which is why, as we're reading Future Noir, they keep saying Android, 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 Android. But that's okay.
People get upset.
People get upset. I know. People get upset when we call them robots, but hey, dude, if it was a human, he would have stumbled over.
He would have fallen over after his head went down. How would he stay upright? Doesn't make any kind of sense.
And humans' grip seizes titans when they die, doesn't it?
That's later on.
You don't let things go.
At first, you let go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought he was going to squish that dove into a dove soup.
No, so he releases the dove. And the dove flies away. They had problems filming.
Big time, because it's a real dove at first, and the freaking thing got wet and would just, what, fall to the floor and flap
just
around?
Was just standing on Rucker's knee and, like, hanging out.
Yeah,
like, flapping and trying to dry his wings. Because nobody realized that birds don't fly when it rains. Because they never noticed that you don't see birds flying in the rain. It's like that thing that happened to you at Walgreens, that the magnets aren't sticking to the plastic.
Did I ever tell the story?
No, tell the story.
Years and years ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Oh, don't mention their name.
I worked for a pharmaceutical company. Well, no, it's not a pharmaceutical.
Pharmacy.
I worked for Walgreens. Fuck them. I worked for Walgreens. Or let's call them Schmalgreens. I worked for Schmalgreens. And we were setting up these shelves.
For a new store.
And we were attaching temporary prices to the shelves. And we were using magnets to stick the paper to the metal shelves as a placeholder. This is where the aspirin will go. This is the price, yada, yada, yada. We get to a portion of the shelving that's plastic. So clearly the magnets won't work, because magnets, contrary to popular belief, do not stick to plastic. So I go...
Without an adhesive.
So I go to the manager, the supervisor, and I'm like, hey, do we have just scotch tape? For the rest of the shelf. And he stares at me like I just told him his horse turned into a cup of tea. And he says, what do you need tape for? We gave you the magnets. I'm like, yeah, but these shelves are plastic. And I said it not... I didn't say it in an aggressive way. I didn't say it in a standing my ground sort of way. I said it as I'm looking around the room waiting for the tape, because that's all you should say. The conversation's over. Yeah, but the shelves are plastic. So, and I'm just kind of, you know, thinking about my lunch. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like... Well, you gave me magnets, and we only have the magnets because of the metal shelves, but these are plastic shelves, and we only have magnets, so we need tape. Why do you need tape if you have magnets? This is what he says to me. For Christ's sake, this is what he says to me. I was like, magnets don't stick to plastic. I didn't know what to say to him. I could either say that, right? Magnets don't stick to plastic, or I could kick him in his chest and say, this is for Sparta. And just that's it. That's the end of my career at Schmalgreens at the time. And he turns to another supervisor that was there, because there was like 30 of us setting up a new store somewhere in like Queens. So there's a bunch of different, they all converged, a bunch of different supervisors and employees. And he turns to this lady and he's like, Sally, Sarah, whatever your name is, doesn't matter. They're having some trouble in a really condescending way. Talking about me. They're having some trouble sticking the magnets to the plastic. And she's like, really? Dude, this went on for about 11 minutes.
They had a meeting, right?
They had a big meeting. What do? I was like, just give me scotch tape or a shotgun.
You didn't say that part.
No, of course not. I was nice and gentle and patient.
Magnets don't stick to plastic.
Oh, we abandoned it, by the way. We abandoned that aisle. They never got me my tape. Even though we sold tape and they could have gave me a roll of tape. Because it's Walgreens. Schmalgreens, sorry. They could have just given me a roll of tape. Nope. All right, we'll just do the other aisles for now. I was like, why did you just give me the... What's with you and the tape? Like, what's going on with the tape? I'm very upset now. Tapping into that memory. It's been a while since I thought about that.
Magnets don't stick to plastic.
It took like a bus and six trains and a jet
It
home.
Was in Staten Island.
Oh, Staten Island. What's the difference? They both suck.
And you got mad that it took an hour and a half on the bus. It
took so long to get
home. You're like, I've never been on a bus this long in my life. Who takes buses?
Bus rides are supposed to be short. In my experience, I go to my aunt's house in Bensonhurst. It's a bus ride. 25 minutes. The train, that's different. Trains, I only take to Manhattan. That's an hour. Hour and a half. I could take that. I accept that. All right, well, it's in Manhattan. I live in Coney Island, the tip of Brooklyn. I'm going to Manhattan. Going to an island over, or whatever the hell that is. And it's, you know, it's going to take a while. But a bus ride for an hour and a half?
And it wasn't just one bus.
A fire? That's a Sea Parks? It was unheard of. I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, magnets don't stick to plastic.
I have no idea what we were talking about before that.
Probably Blade Runner.
Yeah, I don't remember what. Oh, the doves.
Oh,
so they
shit.
Didn't know the doves don't fly when it rains.
Wow, you just saved the whole. You just saved the whole universe. I had no idea.
So they had to wait, and they just kind of edited around it for now, and they waited and got a dry dove, did all their rain effects, kept that dove dry, and then released it after they turned off the rain effects to film it.
This version's all, that whole shot is Fugazi, right? It's like, it's daytime, it's weird, isn't it?
It looks like dawn. Yeah, like right. The sun's starting to come up.
The sky doesn't look right.
We've never seen the sun in this, except off of Tyrol.
Right.
Off the building, but like, doves don't fly in the rain.
So the first time we see Rachel is the first and last time we see the sun.
Yeah.
That has to mean something. I mean, I'm not smart. I don't know what it means, but it has to mean something.
She is the sun.
She is the sun.
And the air.
Shut your mouth. Oh, that's a good song. You got all things wrong. I'm a replicant and I need to be loved. Just like Chud. God damn it, Chud. You ruined my song.
Chud, we really are going to make a shirt. We're all going to wear it. Everyone across the country is going to wear it. Like our six fans.
So he releases the dove.
Yeah.
And let's just say I'm a stupid American. And I don't get the symbolism. Let's just say I'm some dumb shit with my Bluth frozen banana t-shirt
That's
on.
That's all faded.
It's, I don't know. Drinking a Red Bull in the middle of the afternoon with no food in his stomach.
So it's real life.
And I'm just all hopped up on taurine right now. And I don't get the symbolism of the dove flying off. I just think, oh, he's dead. The dove can escape finally. Poor dove has gone through some shit. That dove went from JF's disgusting apartment into Roy's hand in the rain, being forced to be held captive in the rain, and then had to fly. And even though he can fly, it must have been jarring for a bird to fly from roof to roof without using its wings. Right? Do you see the...
What do you mean not using his wings?
That's some bullshit right there. That's horrible.
What do you mean not using his wings?
Because he was in Rutger's hand, in Roy's hand. So he went for the trip. It's like putting a bird on a plane and flying it. It's like, he's going to turn to you and say, I could have done that myself. Okay, I have wings, so, stupid. So
Birds like those are trained.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Okay.
This is my thing.
Egg times.
Egg times?
Yeah, from the time they were, like, as soon as they're hatchlings, they're trained from little birds.
Man, you just said egg times, and that you just made that up. You just,
oh, yeah.
From the time,
like, end times, but egg times.
Egg times. Egg times is something huge. That's something you have to do.
Nothing
something.
I ever say catches on. I am not that cool.
I don't know about never, that, man.
Aloha more brain, nothing catches on.
Aloha more brain, people liked that
but
when you said
that. But
you
don't see, it's not It's not coming. It's not fetch or anything. But
you have to...
It's not going
to
happen.
But you have to make 17 different Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts, and you have to pretend to be people that it caught on to. Do you
have time for this?
But that's how these things catch on.
No, no. It catches on because other people say it.
Pathetic people create their own network of false idols. I could say anything I want. This is my show, and it's almost over. So, sucker, you listen to this.
You
want
to do two
after 108 episodes, they're suddenly going to... change the channel on their phone.
First off, you want to do two other podcasts.
Yeah.
You don't want to alienate the 7 people who listen to you.
The Davids will listen to us. Debbie's going to listen to us. Brian's going to listen to us.
Debbie.
Alan's
going to... Doris.
And Doris. Doris. There's the Debbie, too. Okay. That's okay. I didn't...
All right. So you're leaving Doris out. And Paul.
Paul.
Alan.
Paul and Alan.
That's better.
Paul Allen. Do you remember Paul Allen from American Psycho? Paul Allen. Wow. Ooh, we can't have Paul and Allen on the list.
Next to each other.
With Paul first.
No. Alan Paul.
Alan Paul. All right, we're getting somewhere. Well, now we're getting somewhere.
Anyway, this poor dove.
So, you would wonder why is that? Who cares? Oh, great, the dove's gone. But it's not. The dove... And I hate even saying it right now because it seems...
Tell me what you think.
It seems like I'm just... it's so obvious and everybody's read about it and heard about it and seen it. So I'm not just saying it because it's the thing to say when you're talking about the end of Blade Runner. But the dove represents... And I'm not educating you, I swear to God, people. I'm not acting like you didn't know this already. The dove has got to represent Roy's soul ascending to heaven, right?
It could be.
It has to be.
The dove is a symbol of peace. The dove is also a symbol of Jesus, right? Jesus Christ.
What? It was?
Doves. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a symbol of Christianity. It could be the soul ascending.
Wait, are you sure? Hold on a second. Are you sure about the dove having anything to do with Christianity?
Yeah, you see doves a lot.
There were no doves in the desert.
Of course there weren't, but there were white men who rode on a donkey either.
So why isn't he holding a donkey in his other hand instead of a dove? And it would have looked cooler, too. It would have been a real testament to his strength. I've held things you people wouldn't believe. A whole donkey.
It could be his soul. It could just be a symbol of peace.
I think it was a symbol of peace when he was just holding it. But I think as he released it, it became something
I think it being
more.
Released, not the fact that it was a dove, just that it was released as a symbol of his soul ascending.
Or maybe yeah, it could be the peace too. He could be,
but the peace
now the
fries.
Peace isn't just for him. It was his inner peace, and now he's releasing it onto the whole world
to
experience.
I think it's the peace that Deckard and Deckard and replicants will have.
They're sharing the love. They're sharing the peace.
Okay.
If we could get along.
Okay.
It's like the end of Rocky IV. If I could change, you could change. Everybody could change.
When the dove was released, did you hear the wind chime music?
I did. Is this track? When he starts saying the speech, the Tears and Rain speech, and the music, is that called Tears and Rain?
I don't know.
Because on the 2049 soundtrack, they have that track again, and it's called Tears and Rain. I wonder if it was called Tears and Rain on this soundtrack.
I'm not sure. I don't pay as much attention to the music as you do.
But I absolutely love those small notes that play as Roy starts his speech, and it keeps going, and then, it goes into... What you're talking
wind
to
chimes.
Now. Wind chimes. Gorgeous music. Gorgeous. This Vangel-is guy. He knows his way around the old keyboard, doesn't he?
Why do you think Deckard's lips part slightly? Is he exhaling?
So Roy dies and Deckard's watching him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over. The threat is gone. This is before or after we see the spinner lift up behind Roy?
Right before, I believe.
And you see Deckard's lips part?
Yeah, is it because he saw the spinner and he like went to say something and got interrupted, or?
I think he's shocked that he just had this touching moment with somebody he just 20 seconds ago he thought was going to murder him. I think he's shocked that he just had the realization Deckard did.
That he's alive.
That it's...
For the very first time.
Nice. That it's over. I meant to say that he's wrong. That he's been wrong the whole time. That he should have... told Brian to shove it, and he should have been some type of activist, fighting to save replicants, fighting for their freedom, because they got it wrong the whole time. And look at this beautiful man. Call him whatever you want. Roy Batty was a man. You know? Zora was a woman. Pris was a woman. Leon was a man. Rachel's a woman. And they're just trying to live out... Or whatever they want to identify as. I didn't mean it that way.
A person.
They're people. And they're just trying to live out their lives. And they got caught up in this mess of a reality that Tyrell and the world put them in. And Deckard's been a cog in that wheel. That goddamn cycle of torment. And now he finally realized it's just he's been wrong the whole time. Sad. And beautiful, because he learned something and he realizes something. And you as a viewer sitting there, I hope other people got to notice the lips parting like you did and read into it like I just did, because I just made all that shit up. But it makes me have an experience while watching a movie. And how often can you say that nowadays?
I have that you said that there's a disconnect when you're watching this movie minute by minute and not moving forwards. It's kind of like some of the impact is taken away from scenes, but on the other hand, you get to take the time to really study 1 minute. But I think how beautiful this scene gets a little lost in the grand scope of the story when you're doing it minute by minute. And I'm actually really looking forward to when we're done, just sitting down and watching the whole movie straight through without the interruptions to really feel it. Because every time we stop to write these notes and to take the minutes, I think it kind of pulls you out of the story.
A little bit.
It is very difficult to actually watch it only minute by minute. It's a struggle to keep the thread of the story and to keep in those same emotions. I find myself watching 2 or 3 minutes before the notes I have to take.
To get back into the
movie, like warming myself up to remember where we am.
That's one of the few reasons. There's a few reasons why I wanted to do 107 and 108 together. The first is obviously to pay proper respect to the speech that Roy gives, so that I could properly pay respect to the character of Roy Batty, so that I could properly pay respect to the actor, Rutger Hauer, who, again, has sadly passed away.
And I want to talk about him, but before we do, let's take today. One last thing that happens, the 1 second thing that happens after Dex slips.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
And then the spinner comes up behind Roy.
We've talked about that spinner several times in this minute, but...
But now we did it, so now let's talk about Rutger Hauer. Let's do it.
So yeah, you think about this genius, Rutger Hauer, who, sadly for me, I don't know about you, I guess we'll go back and forth. I didn't experience Rutger Hauer a lot growing up as a kid in the 80s. I saw him on all these different VHS covers that my mom had in the house. We had an extensive VHS library growing up, and he always popped up here and there. I always saw this guy. He had such a distinct look. That face, that chiseled face, and he I think always, or at least a large percentage of the time, he had that blonde hair. But I never really saw him in anything, because I guess he was in R-rated movies a lot, or whatever the reason. And so now, as I'm older, and how I've grown to love Blade Runner, and then we decided to do this show, and loving him even more, and then the WinterCon experience where the guy almost crashed his bike into me and Fred, and it was just amazing and beautiful. And then you said something so awesome before, when you were reading Future Noir on the air, where Rutger Hauer said that he understands, he being Rutger Hauer, understands Roy Batty better than Hampton Fancher ever could, or David Peoples ever could. So he felt it an obligation, his duty, to add his own lines. I didn't want to say the word lines because it's simplifying, but you know what I mean. Like he
interprets the script.
He had to, he had to add the Tears and Rain line because he felt that's what Roy Batty would have said, and nobody knows better. This is a Rutger Hauer quote. Nobody knows Roy Batty better than me. This ultra talented, devoted dude is gone. So it's no surprise that you said he thought about it and wrote it down.
Yeah, he sat down and actually wrote it. It wasn't improv.
Just kind of threw it in there. I guess he forced it in with Ridley. Yeah. So I haven't had a chance to go over his catalog a lot of movies, his body of work. And now I looked over some stuff that I've seen of his and haven't seen of his. And Did you have the same experience as me?
I have a story I want to tell.
Oh, go on. Thanks for sitting through that, by the
That's
way.
That's not a problem.
I'm going to try to cut it down.
No, you don't have to.
No, I'll just leave it.
I have this problem the last few years, probably since we've had children, where I'm kind of like Kelly Bundy when they're trying to teach her something new. Where to learn something new, she has to get rid of something else so she forgets what a doorbell is.
A pitcher full of information poured into a thimble-sized brain.
Right, that's how I feel.
So I didn't mean that on you about you, by the way. It's just that's the quote.
You got really nervous.
That's the quote from Eric.
Yeah, because that's exactly right. Because
you're wicked smart.
Thank you. Right. No, I know lots of stupid facts. It doesn't mean I'm smart.
No, you're smart and you know a lot of stupid stuff.
I'm very factual. I get it. Anyway, I have been slowly releasing my factual knowledge of movies and actors.
Releasing in a bad way, like they're leaving
right.
you.
Like I used to be really good at like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type of thing.
Yeah.
I can no longer play those kinds of games because I've been releasing that. That being said, we were watching American Horror Story. We're watching the season Cult.
Yes.
The other day. And we're looking at the character Beverly, and I'm like, where do I know her from? And you're like, seriously, bro? I'm like, what's the problem? You're like, she was on True Blood.
Which is your show.
Which is my show that you've watched only like a minute or two here or there. You've never actually sat through it.
I watched True Blood the way you watch wrestling with me back in the day.
Like, no, the way I watch wrestling
you weren't
now.
Really, well, I don't watch anymore, but maybe 10 years ago.
And I'm
just
like,
kinda on.
Oh yeah. So here we are with Rutger Hauer, and I decide to take a look at his IMDb. And I go, God damn it. Because obviously Rutger Hauer was in The Hitcher. Classic
film. You can do the
And then I go, he was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I love. With Luke Perry.
I don't remember
and
him in that at
now
all.
Now that I said it, I went, oh my god, he was like the head vampire dude. Like, I totally get it. And then I hear Batman Begins, and I'm like, damn it!
How did I forget
that he was in Batman Begins?
Didn't you get the memo?
And then the kicker is, once again,
Hobo with a Shotgun.
He was in True Blood!
He was in True Blood.
I've read the books, I watched the show.
And you forgot.
That's
okay. It has been a while, you know that, right?
He was a big deal! No, but he was a big deal on the show. He was her grandfather. And the only excuse I'll make for not remembering all the True Blood people is because, one, I've already met Alexander Skarsgård.
Mm-hmm.
Life can be complete. He was 4 inches away from me.
Where? When did you meet him?
After Fred's birthday party one year at the
clubhouse. Oh, of course. We were all there,
We went
yes.
to that other bar.
Wait, Alexander Skarsgård?
Yeah.
Who am I thinking of? Who's the guy?
You're thinking of the one from Broken Glass that you love.
No, who's not Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting? Who's his competition? His math genius guy?
That's not...
Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, but that's not...
I thought you meant him.
That's not Robin Williams' competition. You mean Matt Damon's?
No, Robin Williams, they have an argument. He's like, you're jealous of me because of my accomplishments.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of Skarsgård.
He was in Green Lantern.
The Northman. I met Eric Northman. Doesn't matter.
No, he was
I met Eric Northman and I grubbed the cigarette off him. Me and Jesse.
God damn it. Well, let me correct myself.
He
wasn't in Green Lantern. Well, he may have been in Green Lantern, but he was definitely
in
Thor.
You're stealing my story.
I
you
apologize.
You just stole my thunder.
I'm sorry. Thunder back to you.
So, Eric Northman. So, in my defense, the reason why I don't remember all the True Blood stuff is I've already met Eric Northman. Life is complete. And then the books got really tawdry and sucky, and I was just like, eh. And I soured on the whole thing. So, maybe that's why I don't remember any True Blood stuff, but I want to think more of it's a thimble-sized brain.
It's not, because you're...
It's a section of my brain for celebrities is only a thimble-sized, and would keep trying to pour a picture of it in there, because to me, they're not important anymore.
Your info, wow, that's big. That's growth, I guess. Because it's true, they're not important.
I don't keep up on movies anymore.
They're not teachers, they're not...
Really just watching Cult.
Yeah.
American Horror Story that came out like 2 years ago.
Which I've been predicting every single event that happens I knew the thing was going to be in the... I don't want to give too many things away, but I knew the pet was going to be in the microwave. I knew the kid was going to disappear from the porch. For God's sake, I knew her. She was going to be a clown.
Doesn't matter. You're revealing the whole story.
I didn't say who.
Doesn't matter. You're revealing the whole story. You're terrible. You do this all the time.
Because it's so annoying. It looks so good, and the music is great, and the gore is very bloody the season. And I love the acting. It's not their fault.
Either way, I just don't keep up on movies anymore. I see things like 6 years after they're out, and I'm like, when did this happen? Because... the portion of my brain that cares about celebrities and new movies.
They made a second RoboCop? She says in 2019.
But yeah, I don't keep track of stuff like this anymore. People are like, did you see what happened on this? And I'm like, is it on Hulu? Can I watch it on
Hulu?
And
on that note, there are a lot of Rutger Hauer movies we have to watch.
Right.
This thing, Flesh and Blood.
But wait.
Which I've had on lined up on Amazon.
But on the flip side of this, I don't miss any episode of Handmaid's Tale.
Well, Rutger Hauer's not in that.
I know, but I'm just saying.
And this is this is supposed to be our double-deckered Rutger Hauer special.
So do we want to talk about the movies we love and why we love him in it?
I love him in Batman Begins. It's a small role, but it's memorable.
Most of these are small roles.
A lot of people were saying that after we got out of Batman Begins. Didn't you get the memo? Either for him Did you get the memo? Right. Some people think they're quoting the Morgan Freeman comeback at the end of the movie, but you're really quoting the Rutger Hauer one because he says it in the best way, the most stylized way. It's awesome.
And he looks so good when he's doing it.
I haven't seen Hobo with a Shotgun yet, but it's my favorite movie poster of all gosh darn time, so I'm going to see it. I don't remember him in Sin City. I saw Sin City on his IMDb.
I don't really remember it.
But was he in the first one or the sequel they did?
I think it was in the first one, but I only saw it like once. But again,
it was a really good movie.
Thimble size part of my brain.
Who the hell was he? Rutger Hauer. Was he Michael Madsen's partner?
He was a cardinal.
Michael Madsen was
thimble size part of your brain now.
Who's the guy with the toupee in Sixth Sense? Bruce Willis. Jesus Christ.
That was a toupee the whole time.
Anyway, so I said, I've been talking about Flesh and Blood for months. I have it on Amazon. It's lined up. I just haven't had the time to watch it, but I want to see it. It looks good. Looks right up my alley. We've talked about his first American film, which was Nighthawks with Stallone in 1981. The year of the Pete, we call 1981 over here in America. 1 year later, he did Blade Runner, 1982. Before that, he did a lot of Dutch films and South African films. He was supposed to be RoboCop. We've talked about that before.
Yes.
That's amazing. I would love to see the bottom of his face in that. Somebody do a Photoshop of the bottom half of Rutger Hauer's face in that RoboCop mask. Because that would look really cool. He's got.
Just tell the person who you want to do it who always does all our pictures for us.
Who?
Give him homework.
Who does all the pictures?
Paul.
Paul doesn't do Photoshop for us, though.
He does all those stills for us. He always does picture stuff for us.
I can't. We can't put these people on blast like this.
Any homework.
Listen, if you really love us, Paul. Paul, if you're cool, and you're cool, right? Photoshop some Rutger Hauer face. Those Rutger Hauer lips and that RoboCop outfit. The Hitcher. I got a Hitcher story.
Okay, tell us.
You want to hear my Hitcher story?
Sure.
She doesn't listen to the show. An old friend of mine, Danielle.
Why don't you tag her when you post this?
I will.
And say I talked about you.
We went to the movies years and years ago to see the remake of The Hitcher, which starred a couple people. I don't know their names except for Sean Bean, who was doing the Rutger Hauer role. Rutger Hauer was the
Hitcher.
Antagonist? Is the bad guy? He was the bad guy in The Hitcher in the 80s. And so they remade it.
And so he literally played the Hitcher. You couldn't just say
he played the Hitcher. He's not the Hitcher, though. Is he the Hitcher?
I don't know.
Did you ever see any of them? Either of them?
I may have when I was younger. Again.
All right, whatever. Anyway.
Thimble size part of my brain.
He's the guy killing people. He's the guy chasing the kids that's killing people. Rutger Hauer is. So I don't think I've seen that one. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't. But fast forward to 20 years later. And they remade it. Sean Bean plays the bad guy. Possibly the Hitcher. Depends on, whose side you're on. I'm sitting there in the movie theater with my friend Danielle. And it's the end of the movie. Spoilers. Sean Bean dies.
He always dies. That's not a spoiler. There's two movies where he didn't die.
He gets shot and he flies out of his shoe. And it's silent in the movie theater. And all of a sudden, my friend Danielle sitting next to me. She goes, ha! His shoe! That's all she said. He got shot out of his shoe. And it was like a great memory. We were just, Sandra and I were just talking about it before we started recording. That was a cool movie theater moment for me. That and when Yoda walked into Palpatine's office and just waved his hand and Palpatine's red-robed guards just fell down. I was like, what the fuck was that? Remember in episode 3? I was so pissed off that those red-robed guards didn't do some damage.
You were like, what just happened?
I was like, what did he do? I've been waiting 30 years to see the Red Rogue Guards. I got so mad. The dude sitting next to me was like, what else did you want? That was good. I was like, you're not good. Shut up. This wasn't good.
I particularly liked when we had a friend who cried during Titanic sitting next to me. And I'm like, why did you make me sit next to him? He's crying.
His name was Dimitri Schwartz. Look him up on Facebook. He sucks. He cried at Titanic.
And he's like sitting next to me and crying. Crying like a baby. And I'm like, why are you crying? You know the ship
sinks. No, not like a baby. But yes, he was moved.
He was... Other people in the theater had a tear. They brushed away. I get it.
Tell them which part he cried during.
He cried during the whole half of the movie.
No, it was during the lovemaking in the car.
He cried the whole movie through. He cried the whole movie through.
That's how you make love to a woman.
But at the end, he was bawling. He actually had the shoulder hiccup thing.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
And I'm
sake.
Like, why did you make me sit next to him? And you were like, because none of us wanted to sit near him. And I was like, thanks.
This is what he does. You should have seen him during Dude, Where's My Car? He cried like a baby.
Everybody cried during Dude, Where's My Car? Because they couldn't understand what they were watching.
Rutger Hauer. Born January 23rd, 1944. So he's 75. He was 75 when he passed today. In Brooklyn.
Maybe he's a...
Netherlands. You thought I was going to say New York. Different kind of Brooklyn.
Do you think he's a vampire like in Buffy? So this is just
in real life?
Yeah.
I hope he is.
He just went underground because he can't live too long? Death becomes her.
That's going to be one of my great regrets. I have two big comic convention regrets. The first was Aria Giovanni. I was too embarrassed to get the picture and like the autograph and talk to her, so I just bought a porno from her.
That she signed,
and then I just left because I should have sat there and took a picture
with her. You have three celebrity regrets.
I should have put my hand around her waist or something, you know what I mean, and a smile for a picture. Anyway, second big celebrity regret is... I must have told this story.
You had to, but I love
it. I had to. All right. So the second regret is Seth Green. I met him in Forbidden Planet, this comic book store in the city
that we used to frequent all the time.
And instead of taking a picture with Seth Green, I took a picture of Seth Green, of him just standing there. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I guess I just get awkward.
And he offered.
And he's like, she can hold the camera. You can take the picture with me. I'm like, nah, that's cool. I didn't get it until I got home. I still didn't understand.
When you told me the story.
Dude, I was excited the whole way home. I'm on the train coming from the city. And I'm like, I got a picture of Seth Green. I'm going to prove to people that I saw Seth Green. And then you're like, why didn't you take it with Seth Green? I was like, what? I don't give a shit about Seth Green. I just like that I saw. But no, looking back, that's a huge regret. I love Seth Green. I loved him since that he was Wiley in some... rollerblading hockey movie with Jack Black and a couple other younger celebrities before they... So yeah, I don't... What the hell's the matter with me when I get in front of
lots
people?
Lots of things.
And the third one, and now the biggest regret, is Rutger Hauer and Sean Young and a bunch of,
and
Blade Runner alumnus came to Queens to do WinterCon, and they were signing autographs and taking pictures, and I don't know if it was the money or I just didn't want to wait online or what the hell my problem was, but I kind of walked up to them and said, hey, hi to them. And
I told them, I was like, listen, and do two or three. I was like, you don't have to do all six or seven people.
But I do have a nice memory of that convention. That's when Rutger Hauer got bored, got on a bicycle, and just rode past security who tried to stop him, and he almost ran into me, Fred, some lady that stopped to take his picture.
And then at the other end of the hall,
Chud and Kristen and Sandra and Jesse come up to us and say, we just saw Rutger Hauer on a bicycle.
I didn't see him.
I was like, we saw him get on the bicycle and he almost killed
us. Jesse and I were busy gambling.
Oh, you guys didn't see him?
No.
Oh, that sucks.
Kristen and Chud were buying some kind of stuffed animals.
Right.
Jesse and I were gambling. I lost my $20. She was playing the Friends machine and won like $100-something.
Wow.
That's when we came back to you guys because we were like, we're rich. And and we see Kristen and Chud come up to you guys. You won't believe what happened. You're like, we're telling them what they won't believe what happened. Just shut up and listen to the story.
He seems like he was really fun-loving. Devil May Care human being. He seemed like a really genuine... Dude, I'm not going to try to, I don't want to get all emotional or anything like that. I didn't know him. I never said a word to him. I never said hi or anything like that. The story goes, he almost hit me with a bicycle once, and he may or may not have winked at me or Fred or somebody behind us.
Or just had something in his eye.
Yeah, I've said it before. But it's one of my fondest memories of at a convention or with a celebrity. So I'm glad I have that. And we're going to miss Rutger Hauer. No more Rutger Hauer movies. I'd love to see Rutger Hauer in some type of... They're remaking...
He has a movie coming out next year.
They're remaking everything
these
days.
He has a movie coming out this year.
I wanted to see him in a Star Wars movie.
The movie that's coming out is a fantasy movie that includes Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What?
It's the sequel to a movie that only came out in, like, Asia and Russia that's based on some kind of Russian folktale.
Hobo with a Shotgun Part 5?
And it was supposed to come out last year, and it didn't. It's coming out this year. It's the second one of some kind of, like, Legend of the Something.
Well, we gotta keep up with that. We gotta keep up.
But the first one is out somewhere in the world to watch it. It may be in Russian, but that's okay. My mom can just translate it for you.
We will find it today. We will find it today. So, Rutger Hauer, if somehow you're able to listen to us, if these
if the dove can bring it
digital
here.
Waves fly through heaven and wherever, you know, and thanks, man. Thanks for being a cool dude. You seemed like you were pretty cool. You didn't seem like some uptight celebrity. You seemed like a genuine human being. And I love Jim Blade Runner, man. What do you got?
I love him in all of this, and I hope he's at peace. I know you don't like when people say stuff like that.
You could say... I don't like when I say things, but you could say whatever you want.
I feel bad for his daughter.
Yeah, I didn't want to get into all that, but sure, yeah. I hope his family's okay. I mean, everybody will be okay.
Listen, he was married to his wife for 50 years.
Really?
That's what it said. His daughter is from his first marriage. His second marriage didn't have any children. He was married to his wife for 50 years. That's a big... I feel for her.
So I didn't look into it, but it sounds like... So they were married up until this point, not divorced or anything. His daughter,
yeah, his
good relationship,
wife.
Everybody.
I don't know. They didn't say the relationship with his daughter. It just said survived by his second wife of 50 years and his
50
daughter.
Years. Wow. 50 years. That's a beautiful.
For all the celebrity.
Gorgeous, gorgeous thing.
And on that note, just it's a gorgeous thing. He had a beautiful body of work and thank you for everything.
Yeah. So we're all fans here. Everybody listening. Everybody hearing this. Which is listening, essentially. Hearing things is listening. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we learned something today, Sandra, about hearing and listening. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out. This is minute 107 and 108, remember. Okay? So this is the episode for this week. This is the only one we're going to drop this week.
Because we don't want to chop it in two.
No, didn't want to chop it. I'm not chopping that speech up. Not going to happen. So we love you guys, and... hold your friends close. Give them a hug. Give somebody a hug. Go visit mom or dad.
Call them.
This fragility of life is a son of a bitch, isn't it? Love you guys. Take it easy. Say bye.
Bye.
I like ending it on your voice.
Why?
Because you got a sweet sounding voice.
I don't. It's very nasally.